Casual Sex is the first studio feature film to acknowledge AIDS and how it squashed the sexual revolution.
It's also the first movie to give the woman's side of the story for sex. I'm Riley Roberts.
And I'm Tara McNamara. This is 80s Movie Guide.
A guide to what's wrong with your parents.
Joining us today is one of the screenwriters of Casual Sex, Wendy Goldman. Hi, Wendy.
Hello.
So, Wendy, I was looking for information on Casual Sex, which is such a great film because, like Riley said, it shows not just what sex was like for women in 1988 and all of the confusion going on then, but I think it really does a great job of showing the wide-ranging perspective, like how women in the early 80s were sort of allowed by society to enjoy sex and be sexually active and have, you know, multiple partners. And then by the end of the 80s, they were slut-shamed. And so I think...
Exactly.
I think it's this amazing time capsule. And when you wrote it, were you... I mean, and it really is the first film to show that. When you wrote it, were you thinking about that?
Oh, first of all, thank you very much for the delicious compliments. I love them. thank you. I love that. And actually, when Kathy and I wrote the film, it was based on a play that we had written, which was actually a musical, believe it or not. And we weren't thinking in some kind of grand way about, you know, what we were going to accomplish. It was really a very personal story to us about our friendship, and we wanted to portray what our lives were like. And we were both single, and we were both questioning about dating and who we would end up with, or who we would even spend 15 minutes with.
Uh-huh.
And that was what our sex life, and that's what our romantic life was like then, and that's what our friendship was like. So that's what we were trying to portray, and we had also felt that our voices seemed to be missing at the time. We were women talking to each other on in a play, first of all, and then luckily when we got to make it into a movie, where were our voices? You know, we had a lot to say on the subject, we felt, and that's how it was born and came together.
So when the sketch, so the three-song sketch that was part of Please Don't Eat the Groundlings show, which is still somewhere in the Groundlings building. I've seen that poster a million times. Yeah. Riley and I both have done a lot of Groundlings classes. We have not been on the stage as Groundlings performers, but we've done ample time.
Second City, though.
Yeah, yeah. Aww. All right, you might get a rivalry going here.
good. It's the best place.
So what year was that when the Please Don't Eat the Groundlings sketch, show sketch was on?
Well, I guess if we did the play in 1985, we did a play from 1985 to 1986. It must have been at least the year before that, because Judy and I sat together, as we often did, in sweatpants, eating a lot of popcorn, and we were saying what did we want to write? We always did sketches together in every Groundlings show that we were in, and we decided that we wanted to do something where we had an opportunity to sing and write music, and we thought, what would be the most ridiculously, potentially funny thing that we could write the actual songs about? And we decided, what about casual sex? That would be, that would be our topic. And so that was how the three songs that we wrote, came to be, and we did them in shows. Judy and I always performed a couple sketches in all the Groundlings shows that we were in together. So I think it must have been the year before we got an opportunity to do the play. And there was a kind of a contest that went on at the Groundlings that year, where a couple different people who were members of the company at the time got to present what they wanted to develop further into an alternate format. That's what they called the kind of show that would be the Groundlings, different than our normal sketch and improv shows. And we were chosen, and we were given the seed money to create the play.
Awesome.
That was so exciting.
So
Oh, we couldn't believe it. Oh, somebody was giving us money to have an actual set, and not just folding chairs. And we both cried, I remember, when we actually saw the set. It was like, oh, no, I made something. Just, we wrote something down on a piece of paper. We loved it. I mean, it was just... It was fabulous.
No, I think we both know, I mean, having done a lot of classes, that would be, you know, because when you're taking the classes in particular, and you are already a stage performer with them, but it's still like, it's all struggling people, all, you know, and the people who come from the classes, by the way, are amazing, much less the stage. It's just amazing. You know, I know my older son also did the Groundlings, and his teacher was Mikey Day, who's on SNL right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the benefit of living in LA.
I also love the play and the movie because they are talking about a topic that wasn't really being talked about in the 80s, or like women were being slut shamed, or like, you know, women were like, I don't know what to do, or, you know, like they were talking about it, and this just brought light to that. But what was it like being a woman in the 80s in LA?
I think in the early 80s when you wrote the three song sketch, you know, so what was the landscape for you and Judy and who you were trying to date then when it came to dating and sex?
Well, I guess what we're talking about is around 1984-ish, because the play itself was in 1985. Uh-huh. And I just remember that we didn't have any sense of we were doing something wrong, or anyone was telling us we were doing something wrong. We were very spontaneous, I felt, in feeling like I could, you know, I'm interested in this person. I'm curious about exploring sex with this person. I either know them for a while or not that much long. And why can't I? You know, like, we didn't really have a sense of, oh, I shouldn't be in particular. And no one was saying it to us.
It was a great
individual. So
it was a great way to meet people. Is that what you're saying? Like Stacey says?
Exactly. It was sort of like, I don't want to go into that many details about people in my own life, but I would say that, I had a lot of experiences. I learned a lot.
You could say it was my friend.
I would say my friend would be Judy. So, but the two of us, we talked about things endlessly, like what was good for us and how did we... how did this experience compare to that experience? And it wasn't like they were all thrilling and happy, and which is what we wrote a lot about in the play and in the movie. But it wasn't like there weren't things that we felt were holding us back, and it wasn't a very judgmental time about that as far as women was concerned. But people weren't writing about it. I didn't see us reflected in the media that we were experiencing, movies we were seeing or plays or books that we were reading at the time. And Judy and I just always talk about these things at length. So why shouldn't we use pieces of our real life and questions we were asking ourselves, and where will this lead? And we, you know, we both still, besides having these experiences, we still were pretty romantic people about the possibility that we could, coming out of this, we could meet a person. And we're a couple people, basically, that would have a longer-term experience. But as far as the play was concerned, and exploring two women that went to a club bed kind of thing, which, by the way, Judy and I had never been to one of those. So we made it up totally, and we didn't get an opportunity to go. We made up this club fun place and what it would be like. And I think we might have looked at some pictures and maybe read some articles about what those places were like, but we just fantasized, this is us going into this kind of experience. And it really wasn't until we had the opportunity to write the movie that Ivan Reitman gave us a chance to go to an actual club night that was in Martinique and really see what the real place was like, and not just our tiny set on the tiny Groundlings stage. So we actually did get to go.
Well, I want to talk
about... I thought we did a pretty good job.
Yeah. No, I want to talk more about... I've never been to Club Med. I want to talk more about that. I think Riley has a question before we...
I was just wondering, one of the main points in this movie is the AIDS outbreak and how Leah Thompson's character is really scared about that. So what was that like for you? And was that written into the play, like, on purpose, or was that just put into the movie during the rewriting of the script?
Yeah, was it even in the 1985 play?
Excellent question. One thing I want to back up just a little bit about the play and then how it transformed into the movie. To Julian and I, we saw this play to be about the women's friendship and the sexuality and the dating, and the men were important, and that's, you know, clearly it was called Casual Sex and there were plenty of relationship things in it, but ultimately it was an exploration of our friendship, which was so great and so very close. And whatever we did, we wanted to the play and the movie to service our experience of our friendship and communicate that. And that was another thing that we didn't really see in, you know, movies or TV that much at the time. And so that was what we were also trying to accomplish. Okay, now, in answer to this question, in the play, there was no mention of AIDS or safe sex or anything. And it really wasn't something that Judy and I or our friends at the time or people we hung out with at the Growling, that wasn't really, you know, as heterosexual females at that time and in our dating life, it wasn't something we were concerned with. And then when we were hired to do the movie, you know, the movie itself had actually started off with the idea that it would be a musical. So it was going to be a very light treatment of it, just like the play was a light treatment of it, but with serious emotional stakes between the two women and in their relationships. But when we were writing the movie, I don't really remember how far along in the writing process it was. Universal got concerned about, wait a minute, you know, how can we make this movie right now? Because now the AIDS outbreak was something that was much more, the concept of this was now spreading more to the concept and the actuality was spreading more to the general population. And so that's how the question mark ended up at the end of Casual Sex, because, which we were like, what? Because they had even thought at one point that we had to change the name of it. There was a lot of nervousness around it.
Yeah, so when the movie comes around,
exactly.
That's really the driving
exactly.
force of the entire movie is how quickly things
exactly.
change, and no one knew what to do. By the way,
exactly.
In trying to do some research for this, I found, because it's always been interesting to me how we've gone from, and I was a teenager at the time, but so I really was too young the whole time the people were having sex without concern. By the time I graduated from high school in 1988. So by the time I graduated, there was, you know, it was the conservative movement had really embraced it. It was like good girls don't have sex. That's kind of the
exactly.
And so that's what I find fascinating about Stacey is that Stacey is so, you know, has no problem, like, oh yeah, it was great, you know, it was a great way to meet people and really enjoyed having sex. And then by the end, she's embarrassed. She feels shame when people mention, or she even dreams about all of her partners. But what I learned in my research is that the government did that, that because the government wasn't funding AIDS education for the gay community, they were instead funding education for other communities like college students and women, and that their PSAs were targeting women about, you know, oh, a bad reputation isn't the only thing you're going to get from having, you know, sex.
Wow,
And so they were the ones doing that to us.
Actually, it trickled down to us in a way because, you know, in a small way compared to the population you're talking about, but you know, we had started off with this play that the two women felt differently about relationships in the play, and they felt, you know, and one of them was much more Stacey was much more experienced than Melissa, just as a character and, you know, as we had portrayed in the movie, but there was no feeling at the end of Stacy going, maybe I shouldn't have done any of this. And it wasn't until, you know, we were really confronted a lot by the studio, you know, they were questioning whether this was the right time for us to still be doing this. And of course that did influence every turn that the plot started to take, because now we were thinking about this, and not with shame. Like I don't really remember feeling, we shouldn't have done what we did, but it was a different time. And I remember the cover of Newsweek and Time magazine and the impact for us about, now we're writing about safe sex. Now we're being conscientious about things that in our lives before that we weren't, and in the play we weren't.
So the studio, I'm assuming, took over the entire thing and changed the entire thing, because this is Hollywood, and they always want to bring a point into it.
I wouldn't say that it was just the studio. I think it had to do with, them, because they were financing it, and they were questioning whether it was in the form that we had written. I can't remember how many drafts we'd already written before we had to make some of these changes and really look at it. Now these times were different. How were we going to meet what was going on in these times as Judy and Nita's writers? And so it was an opportunity in a way to express now what our thoughts were. But also we were, you know, put into that position by the studio. We wanted them to make the movie, and we wanted it to be honest too. Well, how were we going to do it?
Tell me how was the play? So like, what happens to Stacy and Melissa in the play? How was it originally written?
Okay. Oh, that's a very good question too. Okay. So in the play, it was important to Judy and I, but really ultimately the play would end so that you're thinking about their friendship. It's what their friendship went through. They went off in two different directions, and they had the big fight just like they did in the movie, and they went off in two different directions. But the end of the play was about them coming together again, not about what their future with these guys was going to be.
Okay.
It was really more an exploration of how their friendship was tested, and then through loving each other so much, we wanted them to end up together in a certain way. You know, it wasn't about, am I going to end up marrying this person, or I'm going to end up, you know, it didn't go off into the future as the movie did about, oh, years go by and then we're going to end up with this guy or that guy, or we're not going to end up in a relationship with someone. It was about, look, these two women, they went through what they went through. Their friendship was more important than all of this. Even though, you know, I'm not saying there isn't anything important about having relationships that are romantic relationships with men, if that's, you know, where you go with it. But it was much more about, it ended much more about their friendship.
And you, I'm making an assumption here because of your hair colors, but you were you Stacy and Judy played Melissa?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. And ironically, when we actually went to Club Ed in Martinique, which was an amazing experience, even though Judy played the character of Melissa, who ends up hating that Club Med experience, she loved it. She loved it. And I hated every minute of it. It was horrible. It was horrible.
So was it really the singles? Was it this, like,
yes.
That's what it was. It's just like a hookup joint. Okay.
Yeah. It was totally a hookup every, you know, that's what you did, we're there for. And I know that it's now gone through all these different changes and stuff, but that was what it was like. So the fact that we had an opportunity to go and see, it was so funny to us that we were the opposite of our characters.
Yeah.
And at that point, I think we still felt like we were still thinking that we were going to be the actors in the movie, the two of us, because when we first when the play was first brought to become to be written as this movie, there was an opportunity. There was a point where Judy and I were going to play the parts, or at least that was what our thinking was going to be. And then it went from being a much more independent kind of film.
Yeah. Well, so let's back up. So the play is out. The reception is. Tell me about the reception. Who all came to see it? Did Ivan and what? How did Ivan Reitman approach you?
Oh my God, it was so exciting. Okay, so first of all, the play. We were only supposed to do it for 8 weeks, and it ended up running for a year.
Oh my gosh! Congratulations!
Unbelievable. Thank you. I mean, that was besides being so excited, we had a set, an actual costume, the whole thing. That was so great. But what happened was, I had worked with Ivan Reitman as an actress. I was on a TV series that he had produced called Delta House, which was based on the movie Animal House.
Right, which he executive produced, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And I was in also a show called The National Lampoon Show that he was involved with. And so he already knew me as an actor. And our play had gotten reviewed in the LA Times. We were so proud. We got a really great review in the LA Times, and that allowed us to be a play that many people, it opened up the world beyond people who normally went to Groundling shows. They actually want to come and see it. And so he contacted me and he said, did I think that the play could become a movie? And of course I went, no, what are you talking about? And I went, yes, why not?
Yes.
But I didn't tell Judy the night that he was coming, because he and his wife, Genevieve, were coming, because I knew she would get really nervous. But I knew he was there. And so they came together, and he was looking to executive produce a movie that Genevieve would be the director of. She was in AFI. She had gone through the AFI. I don't know if it was the women's program or the director's program at AFI, and she was looking for a piece to direct, and this became the piece that she wanted to direct.
Her one and only.
So, I know.
I think she did a great job. Right? I don't know why. I'm curious why you think she didn't do any more. Like, did she not have to?
And that's why? I have no idea. I really have no idea. Because you do this, and it became something that Universal, as I said, wanted to make a bigger deal out of. That's probably like a dopey way to say it, but they wanted to make a bigger deal out of it and put more money into it. And that's when they wanted, although Judy and I did have an opportunity to screen test for the movie, that's when they went to Leah Thompson, and that's when they also went to Victoria Jackson, who had a bigger presence at the time than we did. And so I don't know why Genevieve didn't direct something else, but this was the time that Judy and I were already in the process of writing it. So
So before the studio decides that they're going to make it a big feature instead of a small, small, more independent film, what was the direction of the film then? How had you, what was that version? And I'm asking because I know Leah Thompson said that the script she had signed on to was a female buddy movie, not a rom-com.
Yes.
So I'm curious what it looked like at this point.
I'm going to tell you that. I will let you know. Okay, here's how that happened. Because it's so interesting. This was our first experience. Like I said, we wrote in sweatpants in our apartment eating popcorn. So all of a sudden, we're on the set at Universal. So, but anyway, what happened was, first in the development, when Judy and I were writing the play as a movie, it was going to be a musical. There was talk anyway with Ivan and Genevieve that it would be a musical, and we screened lots of musicals, and we talked about how that would happen, and we went into all this. And for a very long time in our drafts, it stopped being a musical pretty quickly, but for a long time in our drafts, the focus of the movie remained, the ending of the movie anyway, remained about the friendship of the two women. And I think always the spirit of it, even in the version that could be regarded as more of a romantic comedy, there was always romance in it, and there was always a romantic comedy element in it. But the way the play had ended, where it was strictly about the women, wasn't what happened in the early drafts of the movie. That happened later once different actors were signed onto the movie, and once the movie was shot, it was tested, as they do. You know, they test these films in front of audiences, and that was excruciating.
Oh.
And all I could think of was, oh, geez. And what came out of that was that Andrew Dice Clay's character tested really, really well, and the audiences really, really loved his character so much. And I can't remember, and I don't want to say something that is inaccurate, but I'm about to say, I think that there were a lot of guys in the theater.
Uh-huh.
When the screening happened, and they just, you know, he was just somebody that they wanted to see more of, and why isn't he part of the ending, which he wasn't, and all of a sudden it became right what happens with him and Stacey, right into the future, takes this movie into the future, and that's how it ended up in that direction.
How did Andrew even get into the movie?
Yeah, I mean, you have all women. This is, I mean, the one thing that's also amazing about Casual Sex is it's so female staffed. And I'm like, and so you're just like, how did Andrew Dice Clay, who was, I mean, you can tell Riley, like, how he was just this loathed man, because he would make these misogynistic jokes, and that was his whole act. And so it's just jaw-dropping that he's in this.
Not to mention, okay, well, I'll say two things. First, I'm going to say a compliment about him, and then I'm going to say something else. So the compliment about him was, I think, and maybe I'm too close to it, but I think that was the best thing he ever did. I mean, I thought he was actually, his acting was actually really good in it. And he, to me, anyway, I thought he came off ultimately pretty sympathetic. But the way his part started to grow and grow, which wasn't what we had originally intended, was at some point, I remember that Ivan and Jean-Viev would go, they wanted to bring in stand-ups into the movie in some way as actors. And they had heard about him, but they started going to comedy clubs more and more. And then we were introduced to him and write for him, and it was like, it kind of got out of our hands in terms of, as these things may do when you're new and you're given a big opportunity to do something. We accommodated the shape of the movie the way, you know, it was going. And
well,
we
let's call
really
it what it is. You guys are improv actors, and you yes-anded everything.
I know. We improvised. That's what I just said. Okay. Next, okay, hand us the circumstances, which is improv. Tell us what our limitations are, and, you know, we'll go there. So we went with it, and it felt like we would do the best version of it, the version that we felt was as truthful to us as we could do it. But it sure was a surprise to us that the movie would end up with that relationship between him and Leah Thompson being this big relationship, because in the play, the play doesn't go, you know, and then years go by and then they end up together or whatever. The play ends with the women, you know, that's the end of the Club Med experience, but it was an opportunity anyway for Judy and I to explore how could we take that character of Stacey and look at her in the future, even though that wasn't what we had originally intended to do. And like you said, we improvised. So they gave us the circumstances, and we did it. You know, and we were on the set, too, and we were writing lines on the set, which we didn't even know that wasn't something that you normally get to do. And one thing I wanted to tell you that was really so Judy me during the course of the writing of the film was that we had offices at Universal, and Judy and I would act out the scene in the empty sets on the back lot of Universal. And so, you know, we would play the characters and we would do the scenes. That's how we wrote the play. We always wrote out loud with each other. We didn't, one of us didn't go off and write and then read the other person's work. We wrote every line together. And so when we got to the part about having to incorporate all these other voices into our world, you know, that was challenging. It was really a big challenge for us.
And it kind of sucks because your entire play was supposed to, like, focus on this specific thing and put light to women and how they have to deal with sex. But it turned into this entire 80s movie where, you know, the girl ends up with a guy at the end and the man saves her day, saves the day and is now sweet and all this stuff, which I guess I think that men play into that part of the audience where you were saying that you had to practice, you know, you had a little audience. But the thing is like, did that also, no, with that ending, did that also like cause to where Leah Thompson had to do her sex scene, and which caused a whole ton of, you know, like women shaming her for not being on film when they had sex, or, you know, like calling her a slut, or, you know, just like all this other stuff.
Well, yeah, I think, I'm curious, when did the nudity come in? I mean, did you guys write that in, or was that something that the studio wanted you guys to do?
You mean when she shot from the back?
Yeah, then you see a lot of butts, which, by the way, I'm glad for Victoria Jackson, because I knew Victoria Jackson for a minute in the late 90s, and she had a great figure. She was a gymnast, and they make her, you know, look really, you know, they make her look
pudgy,
heavier.
Pudgy.
Yeah. Yeah. She's got like a rounder face, so they could, and she's, you know, she's got a well endowed chest, so they could do that. But I was glad that she did the nudity so she could show everybody what a cute figure she had, you know, instead of being under the baggy shorts. But I was curious when the nudity came in. Again, this is an all female staff, and how, because they're on the beach, and then in Leah Thompson's sex scene, you know, they unzip pretty low. And then Victoria Jackson, when she has sex, she walks out of the room. So there's just a lot. By the way, unfortunately, because of the internet, which you had no idea of knowing was coming, when you put the title in and you try to find anything, poor Leah Thompson and Victoria Jackson, who, of course, is a Christian fundamentalist, come up on all these porn sites.
I know.
These poor women.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, not safe for work to, like, Google this.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, let's just say something about the, where do I start? Okay. So, I don't know how, and I don't remember, unfortunately, how Leah felt about shooting those scenes, and that's something that, you know, she can speak to. But I thought that, you know, our experience watching it was that it was shot we wanted it to be sexy, and we wanted it, and the two women, I don't remember us going, that is, you know, that shouldn't happen, or why are there so many women involved with this? It shouldn't happen. I guess we just felt that it was, at the least at the time, and now, of course, years have gone by and other thinking has happened, but I don't remember that being a big issue to us and thinking that there was something that was extraordinarily weird about it. It was or uncomfortable or something.
Well, I mean, for the 80s, honestly, it has very little nudity for women compared to other 80s sex movies, you know.
Totally.
So it was a win.
Totally. And I don't think anybody was pushing for their my memory, there was no male executive or anybody, there was no question about that, where somebody was trying to move it in one direction rather than another direction. And I think it was just because you're writing a movie about sex, and you usually are doing that with not a lot of clothes on. And I guess I thought it looked beautiful. And I didn't really, I hope that they didn't feel uncomfortable, but I don't remember it. I mean, any more than you would when you're an actor and that you're being asked to do something like that. I didn't remember them being asked to do anything that would make them feel uncomfortable.
Okay.
And as far as, and I mean, that's not my memory, but I hope they didn't think of it that way. And I don't, and I also think that we wanted it to be sexy. We wanted the whole movie to be where sex was in the air, because that's what, that was a lot of what was going on in it. And I think that although there was a very protective, I think Genevieve was protective of the actresses. She's an actress too. So at the time, I don't know if you would say she was a former actress at the time. I don't know if she was still acting or not. So she was, I think she was empathetic about it. So I don't really remember that. I don't remember any weirdness about it. And as far as Victoria's, any kind of thing that would be body shaming about it, I think that, you know, times have changed, but that Judy was of the two of us, Judy had a rounder face and Judy had body issues herself. And that was part of what we were writing about and what we were thinking about and the way she talked about herself. And so it was part of a conversation that we would have. And that comes up when you're talking about sex too, because sex involves. You know,
well, certainly, by the way, I think certainly in the 80s too, I mean, you know, being voluptuous in any way in the 80s,
yeah,
right? Because it was just, this is what I tell,
yeah,
Riley all the time. Riley is, you know, 5'9". Yeah. She's really thin and she wants to have a big butt. And I have like a nice size butt. And I'm like, my whole 80s life, you know, just wanted it to go away.
Right.
And so,
exactly.
Trying to get her to appreciate that. I mean, in Roadhouse, this is my biggest example, Kelly Lynch, who of course is,
right,
like 6 foot tall, so thin, and has, to be fair, no butt. And the guys are all like, look at her ass, you know? And I'm like, that's what,
wow,
we grew up with. Like, that's what I grew up with, thinking,
well,
that.
Totally.
But now we just get called flat-chested and flat-assed. Whatever, it's fine.
But you would have been great in the 80s.
But, you know, that leads,
yeah,
to women's insecurities, you know, and all that stuff, which I think is Victoria's character, is like the whole point of her character is that she's insecure, and that's why the sex,
yes,
like, for her is weird.
Yeah. Oh, that leads,
yes,
me to another question.
And
I want to ask you if,
okay,
and I don't want to cut you off,
yes,
of any great,
please,
points.
Do.
Please, any.
Oh, the only thing I wanted to say. Remember your question. The only thing I wanted to say before we move off of Andrew Dice Clay.
No.
Is that Judy was a stand-up, and in her act, she would do a character making fun of Andrew Dice Clay called Andrea Dice Clay.
This
and she would do his act, but she would do it as her, a woman. And if I don't know if there's any film of her doing that you can get online, but it is really, really funny. So the irony of her doing that character and us having to write for him, not having to, but being asked to write to, I guess also having to, it was really a lot. So that I just want to say that. Okay,
yeah.
Now, what
were you gonna say? Well, by the way, yeah, before we move off of Andrew Dice Clay, so Leah Thompson also said that they filmed her marrying three different guys is what she said. And so I don't know so tell us about those other endings. I'm curious about the other endings that you had and who she was originally supposed to marry and how that went down.
I hope I'm remembering this right. Oh my God, am I? Okay. I don't think in any of the other endings she married anybody.
Okay.
I think that it wasn't until, and in fact, I am right. I do know what I'm talking about. When it wasn't until that testing happened, which they do with every movie. It's not as though it was some remarkable thing to our movie. And all the TV shows I've worked on, there's testing involved.
Oh, right, right.
But coming out of the testing, in order to make there was a fear at the time that, oh no, the only people that are going to go to this are women. Oh, what if only women go to this? That's not going to be enough of a box office draw. And when Andrew Dice Clay showed up on screen, then the guys were very into it. And we were saying, yeah, I know, but isn't it enough that women are just going to love this movie because of their friendship and that's where it goes? So that was what the ending for us was always about in the various drafts. It followed the romantic comedies involved with them and, you know, the relationships they were having, but it was about will they or won't their friendship.
Yeah.
And stay through this trip.
And
that was the ending.
Okay, so...
It ended on them as opposed to ending on who they end up with.
So when they make the switch to Andrew Dice Clay, because one of the moments that's really hard to take is that, you know, I mean, so I guess then the takeaway is, oh, don't judge a book by its cover. And then for the male audience, yes, mm-hmm. you can be a total pig and you can still get Leah Thompson to marry you, even though you're, you know, but beyond that.
Didn't he change a little bit?
Well, he had read so he had some character development for sure. And then
to be sensitive.
Yeah, he was like, like exactly. It's like pretend to be sensitive. You're not like he's not actually sensitive. And then once he realizes, maybe I want to have sex with one person for the rest of my life, since I cannot get multiple women to get on my tail. You know what I mean? So that's why I feel no sympathy for him.
I'll give you that. Yes. I mean, that was at least our hope was we had to go somewhere with him. It was unexpected to to us because that wasn't the way we wrote him to be.
But he sleeps with Melissa. Like, not only does he sleep with Melissa, he takes advantage of Melissa when she's drunk. And that's why you're like, wait, Stacey can't wind up with him.
Then she feels disgusted, and he just sits there with a cigarette. Like, ew.
Exactly. We had a lot of work to do to get him, his character, not him as a person or him as an actor, but to get his character palatable enough to us so that we could feel okay with it. But it was improvising. You know, it was a lot of work to get him. I really do think his performance, that he was able to show a side of himself. I felt watching him that I didn't know he could do. But talk about it, taking a challenging person and a challenging character, because that was his persona.
But for you, there was some gnashing of teeth. Is that what you're saying, like in writing, so that Andrew Dice Clay winds up with the girl?
It was not an easy. mission, and I think that probably there was a lot of duty and I going, how do we do this? It was always that this was what we were gonna. We had to solve it. And I think, my whole background is improv, and Judy's part of it, besides the stand-up, was improv. And so you're given conditions, and you have to work within the conditions that you're given and make something that feels right to you. So we did what we could to make it feel right to us. And but it was surprising, and it was a shocking development to us. It was like, no, our story is about the girl, like the women. It's like us. It's like we want to end up together. You know, let the friends end up together. But that's what happens when it's not. It's not. It wasn't our money. We weren't making the movie. We had no. It wasn't like we had leverage in this situation where we could go, no, we're not doing that. You know, and these were people with many, many more years of movie making. Ivan Reitman is,
Right. I mean Ivan Reitman was huge at that time. I mean, he had so much power.
No, it's like he was teaching us how to write a movie.
Yeah.
He had never written a movie before, and we had never written a play before, but we had never written a movie before. Well, we had never... that got, as actresses, we've never received a full script before. When you go to audition as an actress, they give you sides. That's a couple of pieces of sheets of paper or whatever they're giving you, lines, and you never saw a whole script. So this was an education for us and an opportunity to have a writing career.
So part
so
of
we
our
wanted to do our best.
Part of our podcast, you know, is it's 80s movies, A Guide to What's Wrong with Your Parents. And
yes.
obviously, you
yes.
know, as we've
a
just addressed, thank you, as we've just addressed, you know, winding up with Andrew Dice Clay is one of the things we've been, you know, teaching women, like, oh, go for the bad boy. They can be changed. They can reform. But then the
exactly.
And we talk about that a lot because that is a recurring theme in the 80s. But there's something that your movie shows that I think is really important and should be, and I think with this whole Brett Kavanaugh thing is a good example of the thinking of the time. So there is a moment, right, where Melissa is on the beach with the psychiatrist and they're yeah. making out and he starts getting handsy and she says, stop. And he says something to the effect, but you don't really want to stop, do you? And he keeps undressing her. And then, of course, they we're relieved that they don't have sex because he can't get it up because, oh, I'm just not attracted to you.
Yeah.
So then it's a put down on her. You know, he's like – he's basically forcing himself on her and then says no because you're not hot enough. But the – but I'm
even
curious –
even though he's not that
– but yeah, he's he's nothing anybody wants anyway. But I'm curious from – for you to did you guys write that? What was your thinking? Or is – I mean, is that just kind of the way things were at the time? Because my recollection is – that guys did have this. There was a saying at the time, you know, of like, oh, she says no, but she means yes. And that there was a little bit of truth to that because women were being taught that you couldn't act like you wanted to have sex. You know, that would be shameful. So you had to sort of play like you didn't and be talked into it. And that's something people don't want to talk about now as being something that existed, but in that scene you kind of see where, I mean, I don't know, you tell me what was going on in that scene.
I will. Okay, I will tell you. I think he says, it's not you, it's me, I'm not attracted to you.
Right, right.
which is a line that came out of my mouth sort of accidentally, and I realized what I said, and then Judy and I went, oh, we gotta write that down. Anyway, it was accidentally right. I think that what we were trying to do was to be true to her character. I don't think we were thinking about what women in general say or do or put in that circumstance at the time. I think her character was a lot more insecure and inexperienced
and uncomfortable.
And I mean, that's, I think that it's really about the specific person that she was to me rather than us trying to do something, about what we felt went on with us during the time, you know, right? So I think that even though in retrospect you look at something and it is reflective of a time, and maybe hopefully women have more of a voice in a circumstance like that now, and they do. And but you see that it's not so. It can sometimes be not so easy, especially if you're a. I mean, she was a very much of an approval-seeking person. She was a people pleaser, And there was that, too. And I think that hopefully as the movie progresses, she gets more and more of a voice, and she gets more clarity about what she wants and who she wants. But I think there was a feeling of intimidation, you know, that she was experiencing. He was manipulative. He was a manipulative kind of character. So I think it's been... In retrospect, it's interesting to see and think about for me too about, you know, how many of us were like that how powerful did we feel in the circumstance? But I think we were writing her.
Yeah.
Because if you exchanged her character with Stacy, it might have been an know, that's a different scene.
Yeah, I mean, I think Stacey was more assertive and more willing to speak up, but I don't. But I do think that Melissa is very indicative of that. Okay, you know, we want, you know, women were sort of being like, okay, we want to have sex. We're not supposed to say yes. We're supposed to, you know, do we want to? Do we really want to? But you know, she goes on the beach alone with him. It looks like her intent is, you know, thinking it's going to go that direction. So you also mentioned that you.
I like the way you just said that. I think it's like, I think that is very true. That is a lot of how we felt. Was I want to? I like this. This is good. I like sex, and I want this to be good sex. But I don't want to look too much like I'm. Too much, like I want it too much, I think that there was a self censoring also going on, more than just the kind of person that she was. I take your point. I get that.
Well, you know, and the thing that really the reception to the movie, and I want to hear from you the reception, but one of the things that when you look back and see people, you know, even just like regular people commenting on boards and stuff, Stacey, Leah Thompson's character, is described as a nymphomaniac or a slut. And that makes me so mad.
Really?
Because would we call a guy that? I don't think so.
No.
Yeah.
Not at all.
And a female.
Not at all.
A female article writer from the New York Times.
Movie critic, Janet Maslin.
Movie critic. She said that Stacey is happily committed to someone with whom the film has never even shown her going to bed.
Yeah. She criticized the movie because, like, oh, it winds up with someone who she didn't even go to bed with. And I'm like, well, what?
What? Okay. Okay. I think these are all really interesting issues about how the women are perceived going after what they want. That there's an element of you can't act like you want it, or you're supposed to pretend you don't want it. And I think that what we were trying to do more with Stacey was to make her be a confident person in that area. Not that she makes good choices, because I don't think the character of Nick is, although he was a bad boy. That was another, I mean, you used the term bad boy before, and that's what his character was, like somebody who...
you know what Nick was? I love that he's named Nick. Every guy I dated named Nick in the 80s and 90s was so hot and dumb as rocks. I mean, that every single one. And I just love that that's who your Nick is, too.
Thank you. But also the idea that I don't know if you've ever experienced this kind of relationship where you would go off to some kind of setting and you could meet somebody and you have this encounter with that person, and it's sexy, and it's romantic, and it's like, oh, they're so, you know, you have an illusion of what they are, and then you bring them home to your real life and your real environment, and you know, they're the kind of person like that character was, who their suit, their luggage was big black trash bags. I mean, it's like this guy is not. He belongs where you met him, and that experience belongs within the context of that and the sexiness of that. And then it's not who your life is. It doesn't fit into your life. And now you really see in the light of being in your home environment, in the light of day, that's not who you should be with.
I think that's something that your generation appreciates more, Riley. I mean, I know I've pretty much married everyone I had sex with, but Riley, you were saying like you had your summer camp experience, you know, and that guy went back to Singapore or whatever,
Singapore.
and you were like, and that was nice, and he was hot, and that was it, and I don't need to
and
ever
he
know.
Spoke five smart. Languages, and he played professional football, so he had a six pack, and then he
there
went to
go.
Singapore, and that was it.
And you're cool with that. You don't want it to go beyond that because it's a nice memory.
Yeah,
and he gave me a kiss
there
goodbye.
You go.
And that was it.
Exactly. Oh, I like the way you think. I like the way you think. That's very smart.
But
I did not belong.
Specifically, my generation, we're like, I feel like Stacy, one of the reasons she brought Nick home was she was just like, this guy's sexy. I had sex with him. We should date now because we had sex. Because of the whole slut shaming thing, where if you had sex with a random stranger, like, that's like you're a slut and something's wrong with you. So I think that was in her mind and she wasn't really, like, consciously, she wasn't thinking about it.
And she wants to keep having monogamous sex.
Yeah. So then when she gets there, she's like, oh, like, I don't want to have sex with this dude forever. Like, I can't even handle him being, like, sitting down on my house. Like, I felt like Nick, like, during the whole movie wasn't doing anything wrong. Like, he seemed that he was like, babe, like, illy. No. Like,
he was just being who he was.
Yeah. Like, he didn't do anything wrong.
Exactly.
She invited him. He didn't invite himself. She dragged him out there. He lost his job because she dragged him out there. And all he did was, like, bring a couple socks. And, like, like he said, he was like, we'll get some boxes. I'll organize. It's just going to be like this for, like, today. And she just flips out and goes full panic attack. So, like, I feel like that one's on her.
Where does romance fit in with what you're talking about? Because I felt like there was, Stacy ended up feeling in that romantic setting with him it was the sex, but also she surprised herself to feel somewhat romantic about him and somewhat like taken with him more than just the sex. That's what we were trying for. I mean, at the time, that's really what we were questioning and what we would get confused about. Is this that we're having good sex, or am I really feeling romantic feelings about this person? Are we going to somehow turn this into something that's a relationship that has a, I guess romance is the only word I can think of. I wish there were a couple more words, but where does romance fit into what you're questioning? Like,
do you mean now or in your film?
Now and the way you see it in the film. Because to Judy and I, when we were writing it, we were thinking we would love to have them be connected. We would love to meet someone and have sex with them and have it become something where there was more feelings towards each other, that was more of an emotional connection that we had with the person. It wasn't anything about, and then I'm going to marry them, which was like not really what we were thinking about. But it was, I can have this happen more than once. I can have this happen over months. This could happen maybe for a year or whatever. This could maybe become monogamous. But then there were other people that you didn't think that way about. Just thought, this could be a really great time that I could have with this person in this setting. And you know, that's it. There was a song in the play the title song in the play was "It's Only Casual Sex." And that's how, you know, sometimes we felt about it. And sometimes we felt like this could lead to something. So I'm just wondering, where does, in your picture now, or looking back on the 80s, both, I'm curious about how you both feel about romance and its connection to sex.
Well, I think that romance in particular is just basically, like, now, it's just if you like the person and they're your type. Like, it's just, like, anything's romantic in the way and passionate. Because, like, I've definitely, like hooked up with guys and I was like, ew, that was gross. But, like, the one guy that I was, like, kind of my boyfriend, like, it was just awesome. Like, it was awesome. Even though it wasn't that great, I felt like it was awesome. But in the movie, I think that, Stacy's character, I mean, Nick, like, sang to her. He brought her on stage. He fulfilled the fantasy of this hot dude that gives you stares across the room, and you're like, ooh, like, why is there not me, you know?
And she felt special because everybody wanted him, and he singled her out, and he's the performer. We always love the guy on stage.
Yeah. And especially, it's kind of cool that now that you said it was a musical, I guess you added a little bit.
What I really like is that Jerry, I don't know if you say it Levine or Levine, right? That I can't think of the character's name, but the one Melissa winds up marrying. I think
Jamie.
It's Jamie, thank you. Yeah, so Jamie shows up. You know, he's just there for her all the time. You know, he doesn't push too hard. He's always present. And so that's how we know that he really cares about her. But now here's another question for you really quickly, which is he's the sensitive man, right? Like the sensitive man was making his appearance in the late 80s as a backlash almost to the Andrew Dice Clay type character. So tell me about incorporating him into your script.
Yes. We like those kind of guys. And we did. I still do. And he was patient. He was thoughtful. And he was going to be worth it. And that's what I think Judy and I would talk about a lot. Like, who will be worth it? Like, who can you invest in? And this character had compassion for Melissa and empathy. And I don't know, we just were attracted to that, and we were attracted to making that happen for her. She deserved that for us. And I think that. And I think if you go back to the scene, I'm thinking about it now, when we find out about the orgasm and that she hadn't had an orgasm, and that, you know, what was it going to take, and other than by herself? he unlocked things in her character that was what we wanted to achieve with her character, was to match her with somebody who would unlock things and bring her a confidence that she didn't have before, just because she could relate to, you know, he was a person that wasn't going to be manipulative or take advantage of her, and he cared. He was a caring person. So we loved writing him as the guy that maybe you would overlook in a way, because he's there, as opposed to the person that's a little bit distant, like Nick, or maybe more than a little bit distant, like Nick. Mm-hmm. And you can't really get to that guy. And that guy can't really get you.
What I mean, like, personally, I would marry Jamie for sure, because he's hot and he's sensitive and he's nice and he's sweet. He's great. But the thing is that we go back to, like, Stacey's character, which I don't know if this was because she wanted, like, the bad boy or not. But now, like, I've had so many guys, like, have crushes on me that are the sweetest. They're cute. They're funny. They're, like, so awesome, and I want them, like, to be my best friend, but I just can't like them. Like, I don't know what it is. I'm not attracted to you like that. Like, it's specifically for my really close friend. Like,
it's because you're
I want to like him so bad. I want to like him so bad, and I'm just like, it's not going to be good because I'm not attracted. It's exactly like the psychiatrist.
I know.
Like, yes, he was. I mean, like, it was kind of rude for him to say that, but at the same time, he didn't have sex with her. He was like, I'm not attracted to you like that. The sex isn't going to be good if I'm not attracted to you. And she said no anyways.
Well,
so
I think that there's an element, and I don't know how much of it is that movies have taught us to be this way, but instead of appreciating the nice guy, the older you get and the more you date those bad boys, the more you appreciate the nice guy. And I do think that the nice ending to your film, as opposed to other 80s films, is that both women do wind up with the nice guys, because essentially Stacey tames the Vin Man, you know? And so that's basically what happens. And so they wind up both getting really nice guys. But I do think that most of the films, like if you think of the end of The Breakfast Club, where Claire winds up with Bender after he sexually,
sexually assaulted her and trying to, like, eat her out underneath the table.
Yeah, it was like all kinds of gross things happen, and then she winds up with him. So I think that's why this is really refreshing. But I do think that what happens is that both people want to have a bit of a challenge. There's something in us, at least when we start to date, that if it's too easy, it's that Groucho Marx quote, you know,
the club. I don't want to be in the club.
Yeah, the people yeah. want you to be a member yeah. of the club. You don't want right. to be a part of that club. You want to be in the club that doesn't
exactly.
want you.
Exactly. There's a challenge thing, and then I think that there's in being attracted to somebody, you know, there's a little dance that's involved with encountering somebody, and when it's too easy, it doesn't. Where's that dance? Like, there's no resistance here, and I'm not getting. But I know that in my own life, and maybe that's partly what we were writing to with Jamie. There was the person that I referred to as the guy I should have been with.
Yeah,
and he was my friend. You know, just exactly like what you were saying. That guy. I see the category you go in the you're my friend category.
Friend
in
zone.
Retrospect, in retrospect, what was I thinking? You know, because I would be chasing Nick.
Yeah, right.
Basically.
Right. We've all had a Nick.
And that's not, yeah. And so it's like, that was my kind of guy. And so, Jamie would be the counterbalance to something like that. He's there. And so I don't know what the chemistry is, but I think chemistry is a big part of this whole thing. And you know, it's what you want, especially at the beginning. I think you have to get through the beginning in order to get to the juicy part at the end.
Right.
So how long can you let yourself fall to see that person really is somebody worth chasing. And I think, and being chased by that person, because there is a dance in there that involves up and back. But I think that Jamie was who we wanted to create. Yeah. And the same in the play. You know, it was the same, we had the same kind of character in the play.
Oh, good.
The person that was there for her. So we didn't, you know, she went through so much. Melissa goes through so much. There should be Jamie at the end. But who there really should be in the play was there really should be Stacy, and they find their way back to each other. So that was really what our story that we were telling.
Well, you've given us more than an hour of your time, and we want to let you go. But I want to make sure that we talk about you. You told me that you and
yes.
that this opened up so many doors for you and Judy, and I want to know from you, what are you doing now?
Oh, well, I live in New York now, and I was living in L.A. for a long time. And what happened to me was this opened up a whole world of writing for me. And I had always, from the time I was really young, set out to be an actress. And I worked as an actress in L.A., and I enjoyed being an actress, but I never thought of myself as far as, I've always been writing too, that's always been something I've been pursuing. So I had finished the TV series in LA. The last series I worked on there, I was an executive producer on a show called Staking It, which was, I like shows about people in high school. Mm-hmm. And this was about two female, this was about two, Staking It was about, it was for MTV, a comedy, and it was about two female best friends. Who've been best friends forever, and one of them falls in love with her friend, and her friend is straight, and she's kind of sexually fluid and figuring herself out. So that was a really great show to work on, and we did three seasons there. And when the show wrapped up, I moved to New York, and I'm writing a play now, and I'm enjoying that. And I teach a class based on things that I've learned in improv called Improv for Writing. And I work with writers who are new writers and professional writers, very experienced writers, but also new writers. And I use a lot of the principles that I learned through improv in order to work with writing. And I also work individually with people one-on-one as a writing coach, which is very much my personality because I've always been kind of the person that people come to read my script and help me, I feel stuck here, or whatever creative issues people are having. I seem to be a person who enjoys and can help people move their projects to the next level. So I'm working on those three things. But as a writer, my focus now is working on a play.
Okay.
And that's what I'm doing here in New York.
Well, thank you, Wendy Goldman. I appreciate your time and for you setting the record straight and getting everything, because there's not much information online about casual sex and how it came to be.
And I just wanted
to
say,
I'm glad that I could help.
And I just wanted to say that congratulations on getting number two for box office right behind Beetlejuice. Like,
yeah.
That's great. That's awesome.
Yeah, that was great to see that, that you guys did that especially against the behemoth of Beetlejuice. So if people want to contact you, WendyGoldman.com, I know that works because that's how I contacted you.
That's great. It's actually Wendy Goldman Writing.
Oh, okay. Okay, WendyGoldmanWriting.com.
So much. You guys are great.
Thank you. And keep listening to 80s Movies, A Guide to What's Wrong with Your Parents. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher.
And Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
Yeah, @ 80s Movie Guide.
Bye.
Bye.